This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Only a handful of players have left a lasting mark on the sport that they played, and certainly Julius Erving, the Hall of Fame basketball legend, is one of them. Michael Jordan once said, "I would have never had the visions I had if I hadn't seen Dr. J in his prime." And Grant Hill said, "Dr. J to me was the NBA. Growing up, all of us would go to our baskets in our room and try to be Dr. J, but we couldn't even do his stuff on our Nerf baskets." Julius, good evening to you. Nice to have you back here on Sports Byline.
Hey, Ron, thanks. Thanks for the compliment from those guys. Nice to talk to you.
When you look back about what you did give to the game and how you improved it, how you helped it develop and mature and nurtured it, what do you appreciate about what you did with basketball?
Well, I think just maybe opening some doors and making legitimate some of the, the outside of the fundamental things that many coaches and purists did not believe a player could do or a team of players could do and still win. You know, I think if a person's style was naturally flamboyant, the term in the 50s and 60s was sort of, it was hot dogging. And I never considered myself a hot dogger. You know, I just, you know, kind of like when I went to the basket, would, you know, shoot it with either the left hand or the right hand, with front spin or back spin, or, you know, maybe finger roll it. And I didn't consider that hot dogging it. I just considered it an extension of the fundamental approach to doing it and a part of the way that I naturally played the game. So as time went on, I really felt somewhat, you know, put off by people who labeled me a hot dog. And throughout most of my amateur and professional career, the teams that I played on won, and I think that helped to make the style legitimate and acceptable.
I would agree with you, Julius, and I also believe that as things happen in life, the ABA was good for Julius Erving, and Julius Erving was good for ABA. That marriage, was that one of the things that you think was the essence of your success?
I think it served as a nice catapult into the pro game. The coming out of the University of Massachusetts, we really didn't have a nationally recognized program. We had two very successful seasons while I was there, my sophomore and junior years, going 18-8 and then 23-3. We got snubbed by the NCAA tournament and invited to the NIT and became the last seeded team both years at 16, because there were 16 teams, played the number one seed and pretty much got eliminated. So I didn't get a lot of national attention, and the program that I was with didn't get major attention as an amateur. And the next step into the pros, going to the ABA, playing for a coach like Al Bianchi, who just kind of, you know, let me play through my mistakes. And I played a lot of minutes early, which I think is, you know, a tremendous advantage for any rookie player to get a lot of playing time on the court as opposed to trying to sit and learn. And then making mistakes and being allowed to correct them on the other end. So that was my good fortune to play for him as my first coach. And you know, the three years in New York, being in the media capital, going up against the fame of the New York Knicks, and kind of beating them at their own game in the middle 70s by capturing two ABA titles. On the heels of their two in 70 and 72, we won in 74 and 76. So gave us a lot of attention and a lot of play. And I think it catapulted and set the stage and set the table very nicely for the 11 years that I played in the NBA.
I found a wonderful quote from you when you were talking about, you recalled the moment that you knew you were destined for success in pro ball. I guess it was a game against the Kentucky Colonels, the Squires against the Colonels. Artis Gilmore, 7'2", 6'9", Dan Issel, both all-stars in the ABA. And your quote was, "I went in between them and just hung there and waited for them to come down. Then I dunked on them so hard I fell on my back. Just doing that made me confident that I could go up against anybody, anytime, anywhere, without any fear."
Well, certainly it gave me more options than standing out there shooting jump shots. You know, made me realize that, you know, I used to always hear, the bigger they come, the harder they fall, and it was always associated with fighting. but I found some truth in that saying in basketball when that play happened, because, you know, not only were they ABA All-Stars, but these were guys who were All-Americans in college each of their varsity seasons. So they were the cream of the crop, and, you know, Artis Gilmore was a national title contender playing that in his final year against Sidney Wicks in UCLA, and, you know, coming in runner-up there. And Dennis, who was certainly not in the shadow of Pete Maravich one bit as, you know, his all-SEC player for all three of his varsity seasons. So these were guys who were the best in the land in their college years and certainly destined to become great pros, and both of them are, with Dan being in the Hall of Fame and Artis, you know, in line to be in there one day. So to make a sensational play against them and to do it kind of routinely for me, you know, it wasn't as if I, you know, had planned to do it. It just kind of flowed out of my game, flowed out of what we were trying to do on the offensive end, and it wasn't hard for me to do. Falling on your back, certainly, you know, wasn't the easiest thing in the world, but making that play just gave me a certain type of a confidence and a belief in myself beyond what I already had, and also made me recognize that some of the things that I was able to do with a basketball, holding it with one hand like it's a soccer ball, had an effect on not only my opponents but on the crowd and sometimes on my teammates.
Dan Issel said you used to go and do those kind of whirling slam dunks during practice just to intimidate the opponent. Was that true?
Well, we had this little thing when I was with the Squires and the Nets and the 76ers where we would go on the road and literally try to steal a crowd. And the easiest way to steal somebody's crowd is to, you know, go out and at warm-up time, put on a little show for them and you know, make some nifty moves and make some slams. And, you know, many of the teams, many of fans who come early, they like to stand around the courtside and watch the warm-ups. And that's when they see some of their best action. And plus, they get a chance to see guys who probably aren't going to play that night shoot the ball and handle the ball and you know, get some court time. So early fans, and if we could steal those fans, we would have people cheering for us in the other team's building. And that's a pretty good thing, I think.
Let me share with you a comment from one of your teammates, Bobby Jones, because one of the things, Julius, that I think made the ABA so special was a group of athletes who came together, and maybe they either didn't want to play for the NBA or the NBA would not have given them an opportunity, that individualism. But there was a common denominator, and that was that camaraderie that existed among the ABA players. Bobby was with us and talked about that camaraderie and how it carried over to the NBA.
I guess the camaraderie of the league, you know, we went from 12 teams to 10 to 8 teams at the very end, and there became a closeness of, you know, we're doing this thing together kind of a thing. And then as we went into the NBA, you know, you really kind of drifted toward, you know, the old ABA guys, and there was a kind of a closer unity as far as the guys that you played with and against during those, I guess, tougher times without the TV contract and the all-night flights to get to a city.
Was the fight for respect among NBA players with their peers in the NBA a major fueling point for those players?
Well, there was a definite competition, not only on the court against opponents, but, you know, sometimes with the teammates that you had if they had not had the ABA experience. I was blessed with Caldwell Jones, Bobby Jones, and George McGinnis as teammates, and they were all former ABA players, and they understood. And one thing that we had a hard time understanding was, you know, the egos that kind of went along with, you know, some of the players who went from college right into the NBA and really weren't that good. And they were just kind of tripping on the fact that they had NBA status. And, you know, some of that exists today. But, you know, it's one of those things that you just have to deal with and overcome. And you really can't change an individual. I guess you just have to go and do the best that you can, do the work that you can do, and let the pieces fall where they may. And having Bobby as a teammate was extra great because, you know, he, you know, not only performed well on the court, but off the court, you know, he could communicate his thoughts very well and his feelings about what was important in life and communicate his spirituality. And, you know, so often we allowed ourselves just to rise way above the pettiness and petty jealousies of who's from the ABA, who's from the NBA, and, you know, who's the better of the lot. That was something for the fans to argue about and debate about, not something for the players to really get into.
Sheila, you're in the car, you're in Memphis, Tennessee, and you're with Julius Erving.
Good evening, guys. Dr. J, it's an honor to finally talk to you.
You
have epitomized professional basketball all my life, well, my young life. I stopped watching the NBA when you stopped playing. What I want to know now is, even though I come from Memphis, where Penny Hardaway graduated from, and Elliott Perry, a lot of basketball talent, I can't quite hook on to a new team or new player. Convince me that I should be an Orlando Magic fan.
Convince you that you should be a Magic fan?
Yes.
Well, you know, I think one thing about the Orlando Magic organization is that, you know, we're part of a family-owned business, and, you know, we have a few teams here in town, the Magic, the Solar Bears. And the family that owns this business really has put its stamp on the Magic. We try to have guys in our camp who have character, who are dedicated professionally, who try to get out into the community and do community service and make a difference.
Thank you very much, Sheila. And Julius, as always, thank you very much. You've always been kind to us here at Sports Byline over the years. And what you did on the basketball court was wonderful, but what you've been since that time when you walked away from the game, the way you have perpetuated that same class, I think that speaks volumes for who you are as a person, which is more important.
Well, Ron, hopefully we can keep that going, and I hope you stay in touch.
Thank you very much, Julius.
Thank you.
Julius Erving, the Hall of Fame basketball legend, joining us and you here on Sports Byline. We've got you on Sports Byline.